This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Sharit Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning. It is Friday the 28th of June and the weekend's nearly here. What are your plans, guys?
Friday. Good morning, friends. I'm excited. But it's going to be a tiring one, though. But a lot of weddings, a lot of family to get together.
It's the last weekend of the Raya, isn't it?
Last weekend of the Raya. Thanks for reminding me. There are still people in my list that I do need to visit. Thanks for that, Xiaoning. How about you guys? What are you guys doing?
I've got some friends from overseas, so instead of just the normal eating, running and sleeping, there'll be some going out with
some
my friends.
Some babysitting as well.
Yeah, right? Babysitting. They've got kids, actually.
I'm going to be going go-karting on Saturday, so
man.
I'm quite excited.
I'm jealous.
I haven't done that in years.
Neither have I. So that's going to be quite fun. I'm a little bit of a speed demon, so...
Neither have I, it's been a while, or neither have I, have you never done go-karting before?
I have done go-karting before, but it was years ago and in Genting Highlands, places. You know?
Yeah, nice place. Genting is cold. You don't want to be, you know, driving under the scorching sun, hot sun.
That's okay. You'll have the wind in your hair, or I guess
you wish.
In your face.
It's not that fast, Lynn.
Okay.
And well, there's no hair. Sorry. I got the glare from Sharpies.
Well, before that, though, we've got a full day ahead of us. And we've got lots of fascinating things to talk about. So what's on the agenda for the morning?
Yeah, I won't call this fascinating. More of an annoyance. Disabled parking. Have you ever driven to a car park and, you know, see a car parked at the disabled space and, you know, without that disabled sticker? Yeah, sometimes you do wonder, you do question whether or not, you know, that person can park there. Now, I've come across it a few times and I am annoyed by it. So finally, government is making it a headline. So, yeah, good stuff.
And I'll be talking about, you know, our reliance on Google Maps and apps, you know, in this age of traffic jams and complicated roads, you know, have we just handed over our lives to these apps? But, you know, can just following it be a complete disaster too?
Please do weigh in on the conversations. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, though, how to make people get healthy. But first, Walking After You by the Foo Fighters, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Sharitz and Xiaoning. That was the Foo Fighters with Walking After You. And speaking of walking, the push to get healthy is not really very new, right? But of course, now gym memberships are becoming more popular. There are fad diets everywhere. But this one chap is recommending redesigning our cities instead. So Dan Abutner, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, he's a National Geographic Fellow. He spent 15 years studying this concept of blue zones, so places where people live the longest, to Okinawa, Japan, Sardinia in Italy, Nicoya in Costa Rica, Ikaria in Greece, and Loma Linda, California. And he's found that in these places, people generally walk more. They tend to cultivate gardens in their houses, and they don't actually have that many mechanical conveniences in their homes. So implying that this is the recipe to building a fitter, healthier society. And it just made me wonder, would this kind of thing work in Malaysia? Because, I mean, we talk a lot about, you know, making our citizens walk more, but the climate is a bit of an impediment there.
Yeah, look, I see where you're coming from, Lynn. But at the same time, he highlighted something important. When your city is not attractive, when it doesn't have a conducive walkway, and, you know, as you mentioned, you know, it doesn't accommodate the fact that we have very hot weather, people will decide to drive instead of walking. So I hope, you know, our Minister of Federal Territory, Khalid Sama, is listening, that, you know, KL has the potential. I mean, they have started work, but that's one thing about KL, though. It's just, there's just not enough trees out there and there's not enough shade, so people are reluctant to walk, and the only shade that you get is probably that link between Pavilion and KLCC, and it's air conditioned. You don't need air conditioned. Maybe fan would do.
Really? I would say we need air conditioning.
No, it's just you know, it doesn't help the environment. Come on, climate change.
I'm just kind of sheepishly in my corner here.
I'm a little bit with Lynn. I do like my air conditioning. But I think in terms of KL as a city, you're right, Sharitz. It's not that walkable, but you do see some progress being made. Definitely, there's been some changes in terms of the pedestrian walkways in the major parts of KL. I think another thing about this article, which is interesting, is that it's part of people's lifestyle. They don't make an extra effort to go to a gym or eat healthy. It is just what they do every day. But if you notice the cities that's been mentioned by Dan, they're all in countries which have nice Mediterranean-like climates. So it's back to your point, Lynn, that you can easily walk around when it's not too humid, right?
I mean, not. I don't know whether necessarily California, because California can be very, very hot and can get tropical weather, particularly during the summer months. So,
but it's not like humid, hot all year round, like us, and then, you know,
no, that's our, okay,
that's
all
our,
right, all right,
our big bugbear here,
okay,
right?
If mm-hmm. if you're using that as an argument, I mean, take our closest neighbor, Thailand. I don't know if you've been there, Bangkok especially. I mean, one thing I noticed, but you correct me if I'm wrong, I do notice that there's not a lot of obesity happening in Bangkok. At least that's my observation, yeah? Mm. But I could be wrong. But one thing that I noticed is that they make a walkway underneath the MRT system. And look, if you've been to Bangkok, people walk there. People love to walk. Yeah. A bit the traffic jam and so forth.
They have to walk. The traffic is crazy.
It's the same case for us as well. And to say that we don't have enough, you know, public transportation these days, I think it's just a matter of a change of mindset. Again, one thing I resonate with Dan Brutner is that if you do have a nice enough city, you know, with enough trees, you could. And Tunku Abdul Rahman has started work. It's not done yet. It's still under construction. It doesn't look pretty over there right now, but I look forward to how it's going to look later on.
Yeah, in maybe about 3 or 4 years when the construction is all completed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess the other example that came to mind was Singapore, right? Because particularly Singapore along Orchard Road, if you can actually get places, get from one end of Orchard Road to another without actually coming out into the heat, because everything is connected by a system of underground tunnels, essentially. And I remember when I first realized this, how easy it was to get around on foot in Singapore. I thought this was a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
Because it's so hot in Singapore. It's hotter even than here, because
that's right.
You know, they're an island city, so you have that kind of urban island heat effect going on. So you don't want to be out. You don't want to be out and under the sun. You want to be in an air conditioned environment. You know, bad as it is for the environment. So I thought that would be a fantastic example, perhaps, that we could use here in KL. It would obviously take a lot of redesigning of and the construction work in order to get to that point from where we are right now, because we are a very car centric city at the moment.
Yeah, because we screwed up before. I mean, the past 30 years with regards to how we design our cities. But anyway, yeah.
I mean, but that was what was trendy at the time, right? Because we were seeing this kind of influx of cars into cities, and you thought this is the future of mobility. I don't know whether they really anticipated the kind of traffic jams we would get as a result 30 years down the line. But you can't really fault them for trying to be forward-looking either. It's just that now perspectives have changed, I guess.
Yeah, but again, it goes down to that, isn't it? I mean, because the city was never conducive for walking in the first place, the people resorted to cars. At least that's... And I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, for me,
the other thing maybe people can do, or offices can do, to encourage people to commute with public transport is to have showers in the office, because when you arrive, you're like super sweaty and sticky, right? And then what do you do, you know? Another thing, maybe offices can allow people to turn up in casual clothing instead of like long sleeve shirts with ties and pants, or like even the equivalent for ladies and with high heels. How do you commute in that?
You commute in sneakers and change, I guess. That would be the thing. But for me, I guess the biggest problem I have with walking around KL, and I would love to cycle around KL, for example, but I'm very wary of cycling on the roads, because our drivers are not necessarily the most polite in the world.
Mm. You mean scary?
Yeah, they're a little bit scary, especially in the city centre.
Give them some credit, la.
I mean, I don't blame them. I fully admit that I am one of them when I am in my car. But when you're a cyclist, it's quite scary. And you can't cycle on the pavements, because the pavements are not accessible. You know, every 50 metres or so, you have a drop off the pavement that you would have to stop a bicycle and, you know, lift it off.
I call it urban trail running or urban trail cycling.
Yeah, I guess that would really be it. It is very much a concrete jungle. Now, let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. What would encourage you to walk instead of drive? Let us know. We're coming up on a couple of messages and then more fascinating discussions for you. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run, and that was Showdown by Electric Light Orchestra. You're here with Lynn Sharitz and Xiao Ning. Now, how many of you use Google Maps or Waze to get everywhere? I admit that I do. And so, you know, it's even sometimes if you know the route, sometimes you go on Waze to find a quicker shortcut, a way to beat the jam, or even just to find out whether some guy is parked by the side of the road and causing a bottleneck.
Whether there's a police up front as well.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there's an article in the CNN that highlighted this adherence to Google Maps, a Google Map detour, which led to about 100 people being stranded along a muddy road. So some would say that it's a failure on Google Maps' part. Others would say maybe we're getting too dependent on technology.
Yeah, it's either way. It's right in the middle. I mean, we can't deny that, especially if we would try to, if we try to relate this back in Kuala Lumpur. Our roads are very confusing. And there's always changes. I mean, from two lanes to one lane to one way to two ways, and then there's construction that is happening, then suddenly all, you know, your signage gets disrupted from, you know, one junction turns to, you know, two, three junctions. I cannot blame anyone for not wanting to use, well, those Google Maps, you know, and Waze especially.
Yeah, I mean, in Malaysia, we are the famous for the, what, SS2-1.
Oh,
okay,
yeah,
and then you get to SS2, which you assume will be next to one, but it's not.
No.
Yeah.
It's actually five lanes to the right, which doesn't make any sense, you know, and then you're going around in circles. So the best thing about Waze is, yeah, or even Google Maps, is that you can find these obscure addresses. But there is some downside, right, to all this in that, you know, I don't know about you, but sometimes I have a bit of anxiety when I use Waze because it takes you through all these like back roads that you've never seen before and you wonder, will I ever get to my destination? Where am I? I don't even know, you know. And the other thing I feel a little bit bad about is that because I'm in these back roads and sometimes in suburban areas, I feel like, should I be going through somebody's like neighborhood road just to get
to my
place?
So you get scared, huh?
I'm like, where am I going?
Right.
Yeah, it's putting that blind faith in technology that can be scary. But at the same time, this is something that I know different people have kind of struggled with because this is always an argument I have with my parents. Whenever we're going somewhere unfamiliar, my father will always be the one to say, why is Waze taking us this way? Let's take the other way. This way is faster. And I'm like, you don't know that for sure. Maybe Waze knows more than we do because they have satellites.
Because
they have data. Yeah, but
actually, Waze works on the principle of everybody engaging and sharing their information, right? Because
people
say they type in, say, jam, sini, roadwork, sana.
I think the fact that you're online, I think now
they
are
connected on your
phone.
They can see how slow you are moving,
yes,
right?
Yes, they can. And then they can prompt you to say, hey, you're moving really slowly on this road. Is there a traffic jam we don't know about?
Wasn't it during Raya because you've got messages during Waze and that people were actually kind of flirting? Or like communicating in the jam, right?
I don't know which channel you signed up in, Xiao Ning, but I did not get those messages.
I've seen some of them, though. It can be quite entertaining, you know, because otherwise, if you're sitting in a traffic jam, there's really nothing to do. So I've been tempted to send a chat out into the Waze void before. But I guess, are we getting too dependent on this, you know? I get teased a lot for being forever attached to my ways rather than actually learning the roads. But so I don't know whether there is a balance to be struck here, or is it just a function of the fact that technology is everywhere and it is available, it is more convenient. So, you know, is it just a natural progression that we are shifting towards a slightly more technologically driven society?
I think it's just natural. The fact that we spend a lot of time on the road, a lot of people. I mean, I used to remember the most I spent is 3 hours, so it's fair to have some assistance there. Entertainment as well, that's another thing I'm thinking about, that we rely so much on technology that, hey, sometimes we don't realize how it's just nice to just be out and hang out at a kopitiam or something.
I don't know, the Waze is great.
Entertain ourselves.
For like if you want to go somewhere new and you want to try something, you want to go to a new city, but you don't want to get lost. Or when you want to find a new foodie destination, you're like typing this and then, you know, it takes you to some obscure place in Tanjung Malim to eat some pao. I mean, that's the best thing about Waze, right?
Yeah, and you don't want to look like a tourist as well, taking out your maps and everything, right? I mean, that's one of the things you want to avoid.
Does anybody buy maps anymore? But the other thing I have about Waze is that, you know, maybe I'm just a bit blur, but it'll say like 200 meters turn right. And I'm like, okay, but there's two right turns. Which one is it? The one in front of me or the one further on? And I have no sense of what 200 meters is like. That's the only thing. Or when you get to this big highway, right? And there's like five branches. And then they're like second to the left, or they give you some Kuala Lumpur.
They just tell you, yeah, keep left.
Keep left, keep left. And then Kuala Lumpur slash Ipoh. But there are like three signs that also say Kuala Lumpur slash Ipoh. Yeah. What do you do?
So clearly you didn't, you weren't into the whole track and field thing when you were a kid, huh? All right.
Yeah, I also feel like we sometimes do get too reliant on technology, particularly also when it comes to communication. Mm. Because how many of us just whip out our phones and WhatsApp or text when we want to talk to somebody, yeah, even when it's a semi-urgent matter, and you're like, hey, can you respond quickly? I'm like, no, just call. Just call.
Exactly.
That would be a lot quicker, especially if it's urgent. And a lot of times things get lost in translation. So it's not necessarily foolproof either. I think for me, the biggest takeaway is that we have to remember that technology is fallible. I mean, we talk a lot about human error, but technology isn't perfect either. So we have to, I guess, take it with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, well, that's why we have those emoticons for, and trying to make it come close as real as possible. But I think you're spot on. I mean, it's nice to just have a phone call. I miss those days when you were able to spend hours on the phone. I mean, back when, you know, when we didn't have
WhatsApp.
All this WhatsApp and all the social media messaging. Don't know if you went through that, but yeah, I did.
No, I communicated by smoke signal back in the day. Okay, well, let us know what you think. Are we getting too reliant on technology? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're coming up on the 6:30 news, and to take you there is Tina Turner with The Best. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Shards Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning. That was the Arctic Monkeys with Baby I'm Yours. But now, guys, let's talk a little bit about accessibility, because the Women's Ministry is looking at ways to curb abuse of disabled facilities, so parking, elevators, even disabled toilets. And I think this basically, it boils down to a civic consciousness problem, right? When these kinds of communal toilets, communal facilities, they don't often get treated very well by Malaysian citizens, even as a whole, when they are actually entitled to them, much less the disabled toilets. So it very much feels like, as a community, we can't have nice things, almost.
Yeah, and it all boils down to our civic consciousness with regards to issues concerning disability. I think it started off, I mean, if you go around when you were a kid, back, especially in the rural areas, I mean, there is a lot of stigma, and there's a lot of, I think for some family, there were a lot of shame when they do have a family member who were disabled. And as a result of that, we don't see them physically. They are not part of the community. As a result, there's very lack of education, a lot of awareness as to the plight that they go through. And today, there are more conscious parents who want to give that quality of life to their children and want to bring them out more. Hence, there is a more urgent need for us to, you know, be more aware that these spaces are there for a reason. Because, again, logistically, and, you know, for an example, unloading of wheelchairs and stuff, it takes a lot of space, and that's why they're there. So, in some ways,
yeah, it's just that, you know, Malaysians, unfortunately, aren't the most civic conscious. I mean, if we look at just the MRT, right?
Mm-hmm.
There were some articles that in within 10 days of the MRT being open, and this is like the main stations, Bukit Bintang, there was already damage to the toilets, the handicapped toilets. People had ripped out the pipes and the handlebars.
Mm.
And for me personally, what really bugbears me is when you go to a mall and there's someone in the wheelchair and we're waiting for the lift, all the able-bodied people, when the door opened, run into the lift.
Yeah.
Rather than let this, you know, person in first, you're like, come on, you can do your little bit, and you don't do it.
Yeah, it's a kind of a very selfish sort of situation, because they think that they see the wheelchair, they think, okay, you're going to take up space, I'm going to get in ahead of you, right? And then as a result, sometimes the wheelchair user doesn't actually have enough space to use the elevator. But the problem is that they don't have any other alternative, right? They can't use the escalators, they can't use staircases. So it's an awful situation all around.
Or they can't even hold the lift if they're inside, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy in the wheelchair needs to get out. Can you please press the door open and let him out first?
Yeah.
You shouldn't just abandon him. Everybody run out also, right?
Yeah. So another, but when it comes to disabled parking spots, I do admit I do see why some people park in them occasionally, particularly within the city centre. Confession time, I have been tempted to park in disabled parking spaces. Just because,
all of us.
Just because, yeah, especially in certain car parks, like the Pavilion car park is one example. Sometimes it's just really crowded. You can't find parking. And you see the disabled parking spot and you're like, oh, it's right there, but I can't use it. So maybe there is a larger...
I'm glaring at you all now.
Shaoning is indeed glaring at me. I haven't actually done it, Shaoning. I've just been tempted. I haven't given in to temptation. But I guess there is just a conversation about the fact that we have so many cars on the roads and our overall infrastructure is not actually up to scratch in terms of dealing with them. So there is a wider ecosystem that needs to be addressed here as well when it comes to allowing kind of accessibility of disabled people, because you kind of can't blame people either when
you've been driving around
a car park for 40 minutes, you can't find parking.
Mm. Well, take public transport, guys. You're able-bodied. Yeah. But the point I have is, like, how can we change mindsets?
Mm.
Right? Because we have to resolve this issue. We cannot always have facilities that are, you know, damaged. So how can we encourage or remind Malaysians to do their part? Mm. Does it start in schools? Is it with the parents?
It has to go multi-pronged. Government has to step in. NGOs have to step in. Corporates have to step in. Parents have to step in. Parents hold the biggest responsibility here because they have this X factor. Because it's, you know, when you have someone part of your family member, you know that you want to elevate that burden, and you have to be a bit more vocal about all these things. I take some of this responsibility. I'm particular with building management when it comes to this issue. Like, what is your responsibility? How are you enforcing this? I have come across and I have spoken to some of the building management and say, hey, look, I don't think this car is meant to park here. What are you doing about it? Are you doing the right thing here?
I think to your point, Shaoning, I think it definitely is a combination of factors. Like, so for example, in Japan, I mean, Japan is, we always use Japan as an example of civic consciousness because their society is structured around this idea that everyone is responsible for the community, right? Mm. So children are given chores very, very young. Children, and even in schools, there are no cleaners. So at the end of every school day, it is always the children all have a duty roster that they have to clean up the school before they leave. So that fosters, that instills that sense of responsibility towards communal property that I think is what is essentially lacking in our society, or at least not quite up to scratch. So I don't know. There's also the element of, particularly with regard to disabled facilities and just accessibility in general.
Yeah.
We have to encourage families to not treat someone with a disability as someone who can't go out on their own. You know, we have to give them their independence, ensure that they're not hidden away in the house. Because just because they do have a disability doesn't mean they're any less of a human being, and doesn't mean that they have any less of a right to go out on their own, to enjoy the city and the country and a life of their own. Therefore, so it's kind of a chicken and egg situation in terms of accessibility. If we don't have people with disabilities visible and active in the
vocal
about issues, infrastructure is not going to change either to reflect that.
But we do have a very vocal disabled community. I mean, I have seen them in the headline a lot. But it's just a matter of, it's always been sidelined. They've always played second fiddle. Government has always not put priority. They haven't placed priority on this. For an example, you say accessibility. Sometimes there are accessible wheelchair access, but you should look at the degree of the incline. It's just horrendous. There's no way you can push your way up. So it's little things like that. It's a discipline on its own. I mean, universities, so you have to question whether or not there are enough courses that would promote things like occupational therapy you have to start sort of glorifying this sort of area of discipline, which is learning social studies.
Normalizing it. Basically.
Yeah, and normalizing it as well.
And integrating them fully into society.
Yeah. So the more, the more workforce we have, the more skilled people we have, the more vocal people get, I think they could, it can make a lot of difference. And again, you could see more of them on the road.
All right. Well, let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. How can we make Malaysia more accessible? Do let us know. Coming up to a couple of messages, and then we'll take a look at social media after this. So be sure to stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Sharit and Xiao Ning. And that lovely tune was Stormy Weather by Etta James. Now, we've had lots of interesting conversations this morning. We've talked about urban development, we've talked about whether we're too reliant on technology, and we've talked about accessibility. And we have had a couple of responses on Twitter and WhatsApp from you guys. So thank you very much for weighing in on the conversation. What do we have so far?
Well, we have from Jerry. He says, you know, do housework. It'll be good exercise and you can save money as well.
Ah, I like that. I mean,
yeah, actually, I mean, in just in terms of, because I think Jerry's talking about
advice.
The walking part, yeah. and getting fit, you know.
Yeah. Well, are you a fan of housework, Xiao Ning?
I have the iRobot. What do you think?
Yeah, no wonder you didn't elaborate so much. Okay, well, we have also a WhatsApp from Kevin Young, and this is about our reliance on technology. Technology for dummies create dummies.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I agree to some extent because it's kind of like hand-holding, right? You create so many different kinds of technology to ensure that we don't face any troubles whatsoever, and then you forget how to deal with those troubles at the end of the day when you don't have technology. So it can be a little bit of a vicious cycle there. Ramli Sirap says, I've clocked at least 5,000 kilometres cycling through the city centre, and have to say, as long as you're polite, predictable and punchy, i.e. keep up with the kapchais, KL drivers are great. Admittedly, a completely different animal from when you're also behind the wheel. 5,000 kilometres is quite impressive, Ramli. Well done.
Okay.
And yeah, I think it's really the predictability that can be a problem when it comes to, at least from my perspective, when you're actually driving and trying to predict people on motorbikes or bicycles.
Well, yeah, so I can relate to him in the sense where I'll combine those two discussions that we had, right? Or relying on technology as well as keeping ourselves sort of active and stuff. So I've got myself an electric bike, which I've clocked in about 1,000, so I'm one-fifth away from
there. Very cool, Sharit.
Yeah, well, but, you know, because it's electric, I won't give myself a lot of credit there. it does take much less effort, but as a result, it becomes a solution for a humid country like us, because the worry about this whole, you know, wanting to exercise to work is that you'll sweat profusely. It's just not fair. You come to work, you get all smelly. It's exactly not what employers are looking for, right? So what's the in-between? You have electric bicycles. So it is available out there. It's just a matter of whether, you know, and some... I know it can be expensive, but you have seen electric scooters prices gone down because a lot more people are buying it. So it's just a matter of, you know, those who can buy it create more demand.
And if you weigh it against maybe the cost of a car, it's a significantly less.
Oh, absolutely.
Less, right?
Yeah. And it, you know, you can link it up with all the MRTs and stuff. It could work. I mean, it's really not a hassle. It's electric scooter is like 5-6 kilos.
Just curious, Sharit, who's scarier, the car drivers or the kapchai drivers? The kapchais.
When I was Cyberjaya, it was the Putrajaya Lake.
Yes.
Yeah. So I kept myself way safe from the cars.
Okay.
At least for me.
Ian McNally also has weighed in on the conversation, and because we asked in what ways are we too reliant on technology, and he says Google Maps still thinks the back gate of my condo is a valid drop-off point for Grab. Most of the time, it's not. Need to try again to change it. And actually, I read this and I laughed initially because I have this exact same problem. Every time I call a Grab, I have to call the Grab driver to say, do you know where my apartment is? Okay, if you don't, I will tell you how to get here. Don't listen to Waze or Google Maps, because they always direct them around some back route and then it takes forever for them to find their way to me. And it's just generally a bit of a stressful situation all around calling a Grab to my house.
Yeah, yeah. Fair enough. For me, every morning is just telling my Grab driver to stop taking the toll because we leave work at 4 o'clock. There's no traffic. So again, it's always that. Yeah, sometimes it's the back road. Works for me though, at least.
And of course, if you think the name Ian McNally sounds familiar, you can catch him on Skip Intro, which is every night at 7 o'clock.
The other thing, which I, you know, back to this point where the Grab drivers don't know where to go. Have you all taken Grab from KLIA too?
Not from KLIA too.
Do you know, because of the whole technology thing, it will show that your car is coming in like 7-8 minutes when it's actually just around the corner.
Right.
Regardless of how long before you've ordered the service. It's very scary. You type it in and it says 7 minutes, and then you wait 7 minutes, and then it starts recalculating, and then before you know it, it's another 7 minutes. That's technology for you guys.
Okay, right.
That is indeed technology for you. Thank you so much for your messages this morning. We've had some very interesting WhatsApps and tweets. We're coming up on the 7 o'clock news, and after that, more interesting discussions on the business end of the morning run. So be sure to stay tuned for that. And here's Royals by Lord, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.